What's up, queens? This is your host, Savannah, and before we begin the show this week, I have a special announcement. I am pleased to announce that I'll be taking part in an Ask Me Anything during the first week of August, sponsored by FDS, for our Patreon subscribers at the Queen Shit and the Level Up tiers. You can ask me about how I like my tea, British weather, it's not great, British gentlemen, or anything else. No topic will be off limits. To take part in the AMA, please sign up to our website at www.thefemaledatingstrategy.com and then send us a message on our Patreon, www.patreon.com/thefemaledatingstrategy, to receive your special Patreon badge for the website. I'm really looking forward to reading and answering your questions, and I cannot wait to hear from you all. On to the show. Welcome to this week's Roaster Scroat. And this week we have a story from a member who wishes to remain anonymous. And she says, about 5 years ago, I got out of a long-term relationship from a guy that I had been in a relationship with for 7 years. We met in university. He broke up with me for someone he met at work. Just have to say, 7 years is a long time to be with somebody. But we move. Anyway, I didn't actually know that Tinder was a hookup app at the time. And I just thought it was a dating app.
Well, so did everybody, right? Because Tinder did advertise itself as a dating app. I think it was men slowly using it outside of its original intention and then being like, of course it's a hookup app. Obviously it's a hookup app, that women just sort of adjusted their expectations for the app. But I do still feel like when it came out, the idea was to go on dates. It was for dating.
Yeah, I'd agree with that as well. To inflate my ego after being dumped, I then created a profile and spoke to a few people. One guy sent a message with emoji flowers and said they were for me. And believe it or not, that somehow impressed me.
Emoji flowers. So not even real flowers, just the rose emoji? Just like two or three of those? Okay.
Well, it was the early days of Tinder. We'll forgive it.
Yeah. The other chats have begun with hi and hey. See, this is why I can see now why she was impressed with the emoji flower, because the bar was already.
Yeah, because the bar is so low.
In the center of the earth at this point. But I ignored them and often received passive aggressive messages. But why did you match with me then? Replies.
I mean, I could have just been swiping. It could have been an accident. I really hate this idea that if you match someone, like, you have to talk with them. Because I've seen that on dating apps too, where guys are like, well, I'm not here to make pen pals, so don't swipe on me if you don't plan to talk to me. And I'm like, well, not with that attitude.
I'm actually grateful when guys show up front that they have a really negative attitude. And I'd say for women listening, you know, don't say in your profile, like, not looking for a hookup or something like that, because it just makes you seem kind of like, you know, not a fun person to hang out with, kind of thing. Right. So when a guy has something like that, I'm like, OK, cool. Now I know who to avoid.
Yeah. And also putting in the no hookups line, also it gives the, or you're basically telling them that that's how other people have seen you on the app, and you don't want to create that impression that you're not getting what you want out of the app, if that makes sense.
It also just makes people think that you're just jaded, and like, even if you are bitter and jaded, you can't just be outwardly bitter and jaded, right? You have to like
keep that shit under wraps.
Keep that shit to yourself, right?
Yeah.
You know, you don't want that to be your opening line. It's just not attractive. But
precisely.
Yeah. Don't sabotage yourself because other men suck.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the flower emoji guy and I talked for a while, and he asked me if I wanted to meet up. And I said yes, and he asked if I wanted him to book a hotel room. Past pick me said yes, of course.
What? Why? Whoa. I don't follow.
I've had guys do that. Yeah, no, guys will, if I say, yeah, let's go for a date, he'll be like, okay, do you want to split a hotel room? And I'm like, what the fuck?
Split.
For what?
Yeah. Split. Or he'll ask if I want to pay for a hotel room for so that I could have the privilege of seeing him. So that I could.
They really, really think Tinder is a free prostitution app. Oh my God.
Literally, they do see Tinder as a free prostitution app. And they act like I should be grateful for the attention. And it's like the fucking male audacity. It's disgusting, really.
I've fortunately never had a guy ask if he should book a hotel room, but wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's what you literally ask a hooker, by the way. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're trying to pay an escort.
Yeah, an out call. Yeah.
Yeah. You would literally have to ask a hooker, should I purchase the hotel or you? Wow. All right, good. Sorry.
He said there was absolutely no pressure, but it was just an option, in quotation marks, if we wanted it. He said he was paying, so I thought I had nothing to lose. Man.
See, the red flag is him asking in the first place, because
yeah, and
this is a man who knows his way around purchasing sex.
Yes, and also the other red flag is the no pressure. Because if there was truly no pressure, you wouldn't say no pressure. Because why would there be pressure?
Guys who say no pressure are
high pressure. Yeah, yeah.
Only people who are trying to sell you something using high pressure sales tactics say, there's no pressure. You can sign up for 30 days and then cancel at the end of 30 days and your full money back kind of thing. No pressure, but it's high pressure.
And then you try to cancel and it's like, are you sure? Let's connect you with one of our sales representative specialists.
Yeah. Like they try to.
Then it's a big, long rigmarole to get it canceled.
Exactly.
So moving on to the date, we met at a Spoons pub. Oh my. Okay, right. Off track here. So Spoons is short for Wetherspoons.
Yeah. What's a Spoons pub? What is that?
So on the roast this groat, it says Savannah will know what this is being from the UK. So enlighten us, Savannah.
So it's like called a Wetherspoons. It's like a chain of pubs which are around the country. The owner of the pubs is an absolute dick. And they basically have super cheap food and drinks. Like you can get, like me and my friends, we would go to Spoons when I was at uni, and you'd be able to get two cocktail pitchers, like a litre. It was like two for £12. It was dirt cheap. And that was because they basically, you know, watered down their alcohol and hired extremely cheap labor, basically. And you know, this is a sort of establishment where you can get.
So it's like the Walmart of pubs.
Yes, where you can get like a full meal for £4.99. It is not expensive at all. Like it's basically somewhere where students who want to get pissed basically go because the drinks are free. And you can, you know, and your money will go a lot further. So this should have been a red flag in and of itself that he's taking her to Spoons, because it means that he is cheap as fuck. This is where, I mean, she was probably hanging out with students in this pub. Like that is how like bottom tier it is. I'm like so angry on her part they took her to Spoons.
Oh.
When you're young and you actually are a student, you like that wouldn't seem like a red flag. But once you're like more mature and have higher standards and stuff, it's like that kind of date would seem insulting, you know?
Yeah.
That's why guys like young women, because they're so easily impressed.
Yeah, exactly.
Or just maybe they're not even impressed. They're just not always able to recognize their own feelings enough to get themselves out of stupid situations like this.
So. We talked for a while and it was vaguely interesting. Despite my past pick me a lib femme mouth saying, no, I want to split it. How can you split a Spoons bill?
Yeah, why would you split something that's $5?
This is what I know this is roast to scroat, but anonymous. Like, why would you split a Spoons bill? You must have been paying like £4.50 and you were arguing with him to split it.
So Spoons must be the UK equivalent of like Applebee's or Chili's over here in the States. That's what it sounds like.
I think it's even worse than that, to be honest. Like, it's just...
Yeah, Applebee's and Chili's is, like, okay. But Spoons sounds like really bottom barrel.
But Spoons is just bottom barrel. And they microwave the meals. Like, a chef came out recently and said that the meals are microwaved. They're not even made in the kitchen. So, oh, gosh. Okay, so on to the back to the split bill. Sorry about the rant. I just hate Spoons so much. I'm like, luckily he said no, but nonetheless, I was impressed he paid. Yes, the bar wasn't too low. It just didn't exist at all for me. We went to the hotel later and had sex.
Why? Why?
It gets worse.
No!
It gets worse.
No!
It gets worse. He had a pencil dick. too long and not girthy enough. So I didn't know it was in until he hit my cervix from it being too long.
Wait, so it was long and skinny? I've never seen a dick like that. I've honestly never seen, I've seen a chode, but I've never seen the opposite of a chode, which is a long and skinny one. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it feels like you're being stabbed. Not in a good way.
Like you're being jabbed with a pen in the cervix.
Yeah.
The aura was good, though, and he bought me breakfast the next day and drove me home. We kept chatting by text, and I was so starved of attention from my ex, I lapped up with this guy. It first began to get weird a few days later. He wouldn't text me suddenly at night, and then the next morning he would declare that he must have fallen asleep early. Okay, I thought. And then he wanted to meet up again. Pick me thought that maybe if we have sex again, he will make sure he doesn't fall asleep when we chat.
Oh.
I'm struggling to follow that logic, personally.
It's okay.
That's sad. That's kind of heartbreaking, actually. I feel bad.
I mean, I have absolutely no idea what I thought was so wonderful about the chat. It was pretty boring, actually. And so we had dinner, he paid, and we had sex, blah, blah, blah. See, this is the reason why I'm really, like, I know a lot of people like frequent communication with their, with the guy they're dating or they're seeing, but this is partly why I don't like it, because the frequency, it speaks, it doesn't, it isn't the same as intimacy. And I feel like a lot of these pickup artists, they'll want to bombard you, especially in the night and in the morning, they tend to target those times because they want to remain on your mind when you fall asleep and be on your mind when you wake up as well. But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's any intimacy there.
Yeah.
It's cheap intimacy. It's like, in fact, I read somewhere with the pickup artist types is they say something like, oh, women are constantly getting bombarded by attention from men. And so if you want to like maintain her attention, you got to do, they're basically describing love bombing, right? But yeah, just like bombarding her with attention so that like you, this man sticks out to her more than the other guys or something. I don't know. It's very stupid.
So after that, he still kept falling asleep and then he escalated to an even more audacious move by cancelling a meetup the hour before we were due to meet because he felt ill, in quotation marks. It was another day and another time for me to make an excuse for him because everyone gets ill, so I should give him a break. And of course, I was so nice over text about it because God forbid I make him feel bad about it at all. So the same nonsense continued, the lackluster chat that I was lapping up and me texting too frequently and him not enough. He did ask in passing if we would ever film ourselves having sex. What?
Why? Like, I mean, okay, so have you had a conversation at any point about if this is, like, a relationship before he starts trying to, like, pimp you out?
Yeah, he actually sounds like a potential, like, sex trafficker, no joke.
Yeah.
Like, the whole hotel room thing, like, the let's film ourselves having sex. Like, he actually sounds like he could become one of those guys to be like, oh, yeah, I need some help paying the bills. Like, let me call some of my friends and you can have sex with them for money. And then straight up, like, just selling into the sex trade.
So luckily I at least had enough sense to outright say no to that and even joked with him, well, how do I know that you won't just share it around? He never did answer that question. Gosh.
Because he was going to.
Because he fucking knew he would.
Obviously. Yeah.
We then progressed to him not texting at all some days. Oh, whoops, I left my phone at home. Or whoops, I didn't charge it last night. Or whoops, I let my mate borrow it and they didn't give it back. All bollocks, of course. And he never sent those messages in quick succession, though. So I never became too suspicious. He knew what he was doing, I'm sure. He then gave the ultimate reason for infrequent texting. That his grandma was ill, so he will be spending a lot of time with her and didn't know if he could really get back to me. On this point, though, somebody raised a really, really good point about how a lot of men will say a family member's ill, or when they say a family member's ill as an excuse, they'll often use a female family member as opposed to a male one. because like my sister used to work in retail, she used to say that like guys would always call in sick, but because they didn't want to use their sick days, they would say, oh, my grandmother's died. And she was like some people are on like their eighth.
How many grandmothers do these guys have? Their eighth grandma
has died. Like, it's always a female family member. And I thought that was actually really interesting, because I think it's an attempt to play on a woman's sense of empathy, especially towards other women. I don't know. That's just a theory that I have. But yeah. And this is the most embarrassing part, because I said by text, oh, it's okay. Don't worry. If you can't text for months at a time, that's fine. I mean, I had absolutely no self-respect at all. I don't even know what I was thinking. I was so out of his league, I was into another galaxy altogether. I love that quote. He was very happy with the he could just text me when he was bored option, which really is what this was. And I was always just so honoured when he had the time to text me back. I only came to my senses when I met someone else who I am still with. Congratulations.
So I think this is a testament to why it's not a great idea to even casually date if your self-esteem isn't good. Because I know at the beginning she was saying that she got back on Tinder to help her get over an ex.
Because she
got
some attention. Ex, yeah.
Yeah. And that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because even low value men, negative zero value men.
It's like a shock to blood, isn't it?
Yeah, they'll sniff out your weakness and they'll pretend to be one thing, or they at least try to be outwardly nice enough that you don't pick up on the fact that you're not actually happy. I mean, the reason why you don't pick up on the fact that you're not actually happy or even paying attention to some of these low value behaviors is because your self-esteem isn't good, right? So it becomes a cycle.
Yeah, well, some of the feedback we got on the multi-dating episode, which was actually really good feedback, you know, because I said, you know, even if I don't see him as husband material, sometimes I'll keep him around for my own personal amusement. And a lot of women were saying that that doesn't work for them because, you know, they avoid low value men the same way an alcoholic would avoid alcohol, because for what, you know, variety of reasons, they just can't like control themselves or, you know.
Yeah, so, I know what you mean.
Like, they're just vulnerable to the low value manipulation tactics, right?
Yeah.
I find them amusing. Like, if a guy tries the low value manipulation tactics, I kind of go, game on. Like, I just laugh to myself. I'm like, oh, this is gonna be fun. Anyways,
yeah, you gotta have a cold, ruthless heart like us to get to pull this off.
Yeah, that was the one thing about the multi-dating episode, is if you over empathize with men or if you feel really bad about yourself, then this isn't gonna work for you.
No, yeah. It won't. You gotta more or less just look at it like this person is occupying your time for exactly as much time as they are interesting to you and no more.
Exactly.
So, and that means like in daily interactions, like end the conversation as soon as you're bored, as soon as you just don't feel like talking to him. But I feel like women tend to want to keep emoting and conversing with guys far past the usefulness of the man.
Yeah. It's the same way like an alcoholic, you know, they can't just have one drink. They can't put it down after one drink. They just feel that compulsion to keep drinking, right? And so if you're, you know, going through some stuff, or you have low self-esteem, or, you know, you haven't leveled up to, like, FDS level. Like, if you haven't leveled up to, like, ruthless strategist level of FDS, you may struggle with, you know, saying no, or with cutting men off at the first sign of disrespect, or even just cutting men off when you're not liking them anymore, you know?
And I don't act like I'm above ever having had these like low self-esteem moments, because I have, but they just were never worth it, you know? And I think after looking at, you know, the scope of my dating experience in hindsight, I'm like, yeah, I can totally tell that the times where I let these kind of low value guys sneak in, I was either really busy, like crazy busy with work or something like that, and I just kind of wanted something to relieve my mind, or I was just not in a good place emotionally, and they were just occupying my time at the time. And I should have just basically figured out my own shit before.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've done the same thing. Like, when I've been at a low point in my life, that's when I'm much more vulnerable to low value or negative value men, you know, manipulation or just time wasting. But I find like, recently, like in the past year, my self-esteem has been so high that like it's like you've got this force field around you that they'll just like keep throwing shit at you and just bounces right off. It's like you just see right through it. So it does take time to get to that, for sure.
We're on a tangent. Let's wrap this up.
But the story has a happy ending because she says that now she's found FDS, at any signs of her partner changing, she will leave him. She ends with, I don't need to find someone else to have the courage to leave and see my worth now. So thanks so much, ladies.
Aww. Nice. That's good.
So, yeah, I just hope that Scrope just, I don't know, chokes on the shitty food at Spoons. Like, what the fuck?
I think it's food poisoning from a microwave meal.
I hope his drink is like doubly diluted, so he doesn't even get the effects of alcohol, but has spent all the money on it.
Yeah, I hope he gets served a virgin cocktail for the price of an alcoholic cocktail.
The thing is, though,
also alcohol is so cheap in Europe. I'm so jealous. Oh my god, like it's so expensive in Canada.
I mean, with Brexit though, we don't really benefit from that anymore. sad face.
That sucks.
But yeah, I just.
So I just Googled Spoons to see what it looks like.
The exteriors are often nice, but it's just the menu and the drinks are just a general atmosphere. It's just like, if a guy took you there on a first date, if you ever come to England and date, you will be very insulted. You should be very insulted.
That's a neg. That's an insult.
You can actually get two meals for £7, for fuck's sake, on a Friday. Two lots of fish and chips for like £7. The thing that gets me, though, was the fact that he actually asked to film them having sex and clearly had plans to share it.
What the hell?
The hotel and the sex tape.
Yeah. And a lot of these guys, they film sex tapes and it's like, but you've got a pencil dick. Like, are you just asking to be trolled? Like, even on, like, porn videos or on, like, the porn subreddits, like, men are always roasting each other's dicks as well. So I don't know why.
Like, imagine posting revenge porn and you have like a 2-inch dick and they don't even focus on the woman. They're just like, ha, look at your micro peen.
They literally do that though. They'll say like, oh, his stroke is whack or his dick is whack. Like other men saying it. It's just.
I love that.
We're glad that you, that you've joined us embarrassed. And yeah, and we hope that a Spoons date will never be in your future again.
All right. So thanks for listening. If you would like to submit your very own roast to Scrope or to just listen to our bonus content, please go to our Patreon at patreon.com/thefemaledatingstrategy. Let's start the show. What's up, queens? Welcome to the Female Dating Strategy Podcast, the meanest female-only pod on the internet. I'm your host, Ro.
And this is Savannah.
And I'm Lilith.
And today we have the oft-requested topic, our best flirting tips.
Yeah, we get asked a lot about flirting.
Yeah, we get a lot of questions about this, actually, about how do you flirt with men. So it's something I actually didn't even think of as a topic we should cover. And I think those of us who are skilled and flirtatious kind of take for granted that it is a skill you have to learn. It's a valuable social skill that a lot of people don't necessarily know how to do.
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of people on the subreddit would ask about flirting, and I'm just like, I don't even know how to teach that. It's one of those things that you do kind of in the moment, and one of the failures of the red pill, one of their many failures, is that they teach men lines, and this is something I have a problem with, is, you know, having specific scripts, like, oh, tell her this line or tell her that line, and then when the woman says something that doesn't fit the script, they just will act sort of confused. Like they don't know how to deal with someone when she doesn't follow the script, right? So I don't really believe in teaching scripts. You kind of have to learn the underlying social skills and learning body language and how to read people and how to, you got to practice.
These are going to be flirting strategies. Perhaps we should not even say tips, because tips kind of leans to what you're just saying, where people think it's like a pickup line or a gimmick. We're going to give you some strategies to initiate flirtatious contact with a guy that you like. Doesn't mean that you're going to be the person that asks them out. Doesn't mean you should do all the heavy lifting when it comes to the social interaction, but just to kind of break the ice, or, you know, get a guy who you've identified that, hey, I would be very happy if he came over and asked me out, how to get his attention, how to build rapport, and give him the opportunity and the space to make the move to ask you out.
Yeah. Flirtation is about building attraction and motivating him to come and make the first move on you.
Bars. Okay. So before we get into that, I think we should set the ground rules. So first of all of our flirting strategies are designed so that the man will have to take the initiative to ask you out eventually. This is not one of those, girl, go ahead and ask him for his number. And the biggest reason why we don't do the overt pickup is because it doesn't really advantage women to do more overt pickups.
Because also men don't respect women who make the first move. That's just a fact. It's not a flex on the patriarchy like you think it is.
No, and also men will say yes to anyone because the possibility of free on-demand pussy for many is too good to pass up. So that's why FDS doesn't recommend that women be the one to ask men out, because most men will just say yes to anyone.
And they'll just gladly string you along.
Yeah.
For however long they feel like it.
Until they find someone they actually want to pursue and they'll run off with her.
Yeah. So if you're looking for long-term commitment, a better strategy is to incentivize him to make the first move and to want to invest.
And if you're the person that does the heavy lifting at the beginning of initiating contact, building rapport, asking him out, planning dates, all that, it's basically like a fish that just jumped into a boat. And this guy is not going to be incentivized to do any of the relationship heavy lifting after that.
Yeah, you've set the tone that you're going to do all the heavy lifting of emotional labor and making things happen.
And if there's one thing we want to discourage women from doing is giving out emotional labor without appropriate reciprocation, without early investment from men too. So that's the preface of the rest of the strategies we're about to give out. So what do you guys think? What are your best flirting strategies?
So first of all, I want to say that nonverbal communication is just as important, if not more important, than the actual words that you are saying. So things like eye contact, how you carry yourself, physical contact, the way that you turn your body, and so on. All of this is going to speak more than... Basically, what I'm getting at is don't just go up to a guy and like confess your feelings, okay? Because that's cringy as hell. And in fact, I don't like it when guys do this either, where, you know, they come up to you and like, I've secretly loved you for years, like that kind of stuff, because it's just going to make the other person uncomfortable and kind of not really sure how to react. The purpose of flirting is to sort of build up attraction over time so that by the time, if you do eventually talk about your feelings, it won't come as a surprise.
Or to just give him the green light to ask you out, even before that.
So that he doesn't feel like a creep.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the first tactic, the first strategy is eye contact, right?
Yeah.
So before we start recording, we were kind of talking about our different strategies when it came to making eye contact with guys. I'm very much in favor of looking at a guy directly and almost like eye fucking him down. If I'm like actually admiring, if I'm admiring his body.
Yeah, I'll make eye contact with a guy, look down and then look back up and then have this kind of bemused look on my face. That's when they go, oh my God, she's totally into me.
Yeah, it's almost like if you Google Princess Diana in the Martin Bashir interview, she does this thing with her eyes, which is exactly what was just described. And it is absolutely mesmerizing. When I watched that interview, I was just completely, completely sucked in by her eyes. We called it the Diana stare. It's not really a stare, but the way she does it. But yeah, definitely Google it. It's a very alluring way to make eye contact with a guy.
Yeah, I love the way that Diana carries herself. She carries herself in a way that's very like powerful yet not intimidating. And she does that thing with her eyes where she kind of tilts her head down and then looks up. So it's almost like she's looking through her eyelashes at you. And yeah, I do that all the time. I didn't even know that was called the Diana stare, but it's a good strategy.
When you guys are describing this, because I haven't seen this interview, it reminds me of like every Looney Tunes cartoon where Bugs Bunny puts on like a wig and lipstick and then tries to flirt with Elmer Fudd and he like looks over his eyelashes. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Like girl bug.
Yeah.
When he's in girl mode. Yeah.
Yeah. When he's in girl mode. Is that what you're talking about? Because I haven't seen this interview. Because that's what it seems like to me.
I haven't seen that cartoon, so I don't know. But yeah.
Or like, have you ever seen the old Disney shorts with Daisy and Donald Duck? And then Daisy Duck always flirts with Donald. with her eyelashes like tilted upwards.
It isn't like she's trying to sucker them in like Bugs Bunny would with Elmer Fudd to like, I don't know, shoot him or something. But it's more just she does it. It's quite subtle the way she does it. I can't really describe it, but it's more, I mean, I would describe it as, I mean, she's giving off the vibe that she's really strong because she's maintaining eye contact, but she also has just a slight hint of being vulnerable about her. She does it really well. I would highly recommend checking out the Diana stare. But I think also to pull that off as well, you do need to accentuate the feature. So she accentuated her eyes quite well as well.
So that's more of a soft feminine type approach. I'm definitely more direct in my desire. If I'm looking at a guy, I'll literally look at him up and down enough for him to notice that I'm looking at him. But I'll also make sure it's not like, I'll also make sure I'm not giving him like a serial killer stare or anything that he's looked back at me. You know what I'm saying? And then I'll just kind of look at him like I desire him. But I mean, that's a little bit more bold. So that just depends on your personal comfort level. I know some women are more comfortable with a more soft feminine approach. I actually feel like I look awkward when I do that because it's just not my personality. And when I've tried to do the more soft feminine approach, I feel like I'm acting.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think that's a key tenet of like flirting in general. Just trying to lean into your personality. I think again, a lot of these dating coaches and pickup artists who try to teach people how to flirt, they do it in a very in quite a cookie cutter way.
Formulaic way.
Yeah, like a formulaic way. And not everybody is an extrovert. There are some people who are introverted, there are some people who are somewhere in the middle. So being able to successfully flirt also requires a level of self-awareness and knowing your personality and how you interact comfortably with people as well.
I'll let my eyes rest on some part of his body I like. I mean, I'm that bold.
Yeah, no, I do the same thing. If I'm at the gym, like the guys that I've talked to at the gym, I'll like look at his face and like look at his arms. Hold that look and then look at his face again. And like, that's when they know in their head, they're like, okay, she's checking me out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I tend to just stare in their eyes, like try and find out like what their corneas are saying personally. And it's even, I do it even more if I'm not like wearing glasses as well. Cause sometimes, because I can't really see that well. So I stare really intensely, but they don't know that, but it helps with the intense stare.
Yeah, see, I've honestly never had to put more effort into getting a guy to approach me than just, like, looking at him a couple of times, maybe smiling the second time, but, like, yeah.
And then I guess consider the environment. So I wouldn't do the stare down at, like, a work function, for example.
True.
Right? If it was, like, a professional meeting, I probably wouldn't be over there looking at guys like they're a meat market. I have had men look at me like we were in a meat market at a professional work function, and it was very uncomfortable and inappropriate. So in that kind of situation, if there is a person that I was kind of interested in meeting, like, I would want to talk to them romantically, then I think I would go for the softer approach in that kind of environment where I would give them friendly eye contact, meaning it's a work function or it's some kind of professional function, come over and say hello, you know. In that kind of environment, you're probably wearing a name tag anyway, so then it's just as easy as just being like, hi, I haven't met you before. You know, you don't even have to really press the eye contact thing too much, just, you know, give them a friendly hello, and then more than likely they'll break the ice anyways, because, you know, you might not know them or you're just getting to know each other because it's a professional mixer.
So we've talked about eye contact, different ways you can use your eyeballs to get a guy to come talk to you. So let's talk about smiling. First of all, I hate to be the person to tell women you should smile more. And I will say that honestly, when I'm flirting, I don't smile a lot. Like, I am very, I'm selective about when I choose to smile or when I choose to laugh. I'll only laugh at a guy's jokes, for example, if I actually think he's being funny. And I find that in my personal experience and from what I've observed, when, you know, you smile at the guy too much or when you laugh at everything he says, I heard someone say that, like, in Russia, they tell you not to smile because, or they tell you not to smile too much because people will think you're simple. And I think there's a little bit of that going on. You know, like, April Andy from Parks and Rec, just the type of guy that I, or the type of woman that I am and the type of guy that I date, I'm usually more kind of deadpan. And the guys that I usually date are like golden retriever boys.
Like Mr. Peanut Butter.
What's Mr. Peanut Butter?
From BoJack Horseman from Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'm kind of like Diane, and he's kind of like Mr. Peanut Butter, like really positive. And so these are the type of guys where, because they don't smile or laugh a lot. So when they do manage to make me smile or they do manage to make me laugh, they get like super excited and like proud of themselves. Like this is a huge achievement or whatever, right? So I don't smile a lot. But when I do smile, it's special when it happens. So, but that I've learned that apparently this is not a opinion that either of you share. So you guys go ahead.
Well, okay. So I have a bad case of resting nice face.
Yeah, I have the opposite. I have resting bitch face.
Yeah. So in some respects, I hate it because people talk to me all the time when I don't want to talk to them because I think I look like a nice person or at least a friendly person. And actually, I am a pretty friendly person. But so for me, smiling or smizing, as it were.
What's smizing?
Like smiling with your eyes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Smiling with your eyes. So that's usually part of my normal speaking voice, my normal speaking mode. So it would feel awkward and uncomfortable for me to not be smiling or smiling with my voice. And I've always been that way. So this, I don't know if this was like female socialization or anything, because I can remember pretty much being like this when I was a kid from as far back as I can remember. So I think I just have that natural continence. So for me, I'm a big fan of flashing a guy a smile. But it does mean that sometimes I'm getting attention from men who I don't want to flirt with, because I think because they're not used to women necessarily always smiling as much as I do, then men think I'm flirting with them when I'm not, or they don't pick up on the fact that I am flirting with them because they're like, well, she smiles at everybody, right? It's not really special. So when I am trying to particularly talk to a guy who I am interested in, I'll have to give him either a smirk, like almost like a smirking sexy smile, like a specific kind of smile that's different from my normal friendly smile, or give him a smile followed by the eye fuck, right?
Yeah, there's different kinds of smile, not like the big old open mouth like toothy grin kind of thing. Yeah, I'll definitely do like a half smile, or like, you know, when you're just talking and the corners of your mouth are kind of up, you know. Yeah, there's different kinds of smiles. They're smirking, but I don't do a lot of big smiles. But yeah, that's just me.
See, I'm somewhere in the middle between like resting bitch face and resting nice face. But a lot of people say that one of my best features is my smile, so I use it quite a lot in a flirting situation. So that kind of goes back to what I said about understanding your personality, your features, and just playing into that. I'm also quite nervous as well, like really, really nervous. Like when people, like when they first meet me, I've had people say, I literally thought you were mute, like you couldn't talk because you're so quiet. And then they realize I actually talk a lot once I'm more comfortable. So being able to smile and maintain eye contact is sort of a way to, it's a way for me to break the ice as somebody who's not an extrovert, but can be very introverted. When I first meet people, particularly a guy I really like. So.
Yeah. See, my eyes are my best feature. So I play up my eyes a lot. I have an okay smile, but yeah, if your smile is like the most beautiful part about you, then definitely play that up for sure.
I think the thing is, though, if you're a smiley person like me, then your boundaries got to be on point, because you'll just start reeling them. You'll start reeling them in, because men just need attention. They love attention. They crave attention. So if you smile or look friendly, then they'll start to think, oh, that's an invitation to talk to her, even if that's just your natural disposition. So that's when you have to almost like strategically ignore people.
Strategically ignore.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's what annoys me, is like when you do smile or when you do laugh, every guy thinks you're flirting with them. And it's like, ugh. That's just that. Ugh. But yeah, so to smile or not to smile, it really depends on the sort of person that you are. And there's different types of smiles. I guess you got to find a happy medium with what you're comfortable with.
My next best flirting tip is putting yourself in the proximity of the guy that you like. I know that seems very, very simplistic, but sometimes just moving yourself or moving your body, just to be in his line of sight, in his orbit, making him aware of you is a way to indirectly get a guy's attention and indirectly flirt. And again, give him the opportunity to come talk to you. So what are your best tips for putting yourself in a guy's proximity? So what I like to do, again, kind of depends on the function. If you're at a bar, it's fairly easy to just sort of, you know, make your way over to where he is. Usually if I spot a guy, I'm like, he's kind of handsome. I'll just sort of meander my way, especially if I'm with a girlfriend or something, to the other side of the bar. I'll even just tell her like, hey, I want to go talk to that guy over there. And so we'll just sort of make our way, still talking to each other, still sipping on our drinks, but just put yourself in the position to see the guy so he can see you and then start your eye contact.
Yeah, because if you're not in his line of sight, how's he going to notice you, right? And in fact, this is one of those, you know, on like YouTube, they have those like top 10 ways to see if a girl is into you. Like one of the top ones is always like, does she look for excuses to like be around you or to be in your line of sight? And it's like, yes, because that is accurate. Like, how are you going to get a guy's attention if you're not in his line of sight, right? So it's almost like, you know, a lot of guys nowadays are saying, you know, how do I know if a girl's into me? How do I ask out a woman in a way where I won't seem like a creep? And a lot of women are thinking like, oh, I want to signal how do I signal attraction without seeming like too desperate and so on. We got to like normalize some of these almost like nonverbal ways of signaling attraction. And these are all like in, you know, for meeting people in person. Is there a different strategy for when you're meeting people online? Because when you meet guys online, it's like you're there to date, right?
I think the difference between when you meet online versus when you meet offline is I feel like when you meet a guy online, they try to force intimacy very quickly because now they have established that you are at least baseline physically attracted to them because you swiped. And also depending on, you know, their particular goals, you know, it could just be that they're trying to hook up or they're trying to escalate to make sure they don't end up in the quote unquote friend zone. So I think when you're flirting with a guy that you meet online, I think you actually have to, put the brakes on significantly versus if you meet someone offline where it just seems, I don't think men don't tend not to be as bold for some reason if you meet them in person. I don't know if this is just me that notices that. Like, I feel like if you meet them in person, they're a little bit better at acting normal.
I think a lot of them are scared and they're like, oh, I don't want a woman to be like to jump down my throat. I mean, to be fair, like low value men or negative value men, they don't really care about making a woman uncomfortable. Whereas high value men, like the men that you actually want to date, a lot of them will be a little bit self-conscious about like, oh, I don't want to seem like a creep or I don't want to make her uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So that's why it can be a challenge. In-person interactions can be a challenge sometimes because the men who are going to approach you are not high value. Like the ones who are going to approach you without you signaling first that you're interested in them. And even if you do signal, a lot of high value men can be, like if they have some social skills, they'll be like, is she really into me? Or is she just like being friendly or, you know, that kind of stuff. So it can be challenging to navigate.
Yeah.
But I will say that it's pretty easy actually to, once you start talking to each other and you start talking about other topics, like you can start talking about the weather. You know, Savannah said offline that Savannah, how do British people flirt? Tell us.
Yeah. So the surefire way to have an icebreaker is just talk about the weather, or they'll talk about, I don't know, how shit the transport is or how hot the tube is, but the weather is a surefire way. And like when I used to travel, like I would always say, oh, such a difficult journey, or oh, this airport's so massive, or just something like that. Like, just talk about the travel or the weather is a surefire way to open the conversation. Especially if it's not a place that you're familiar with, if they've picked the restaurant, a really, really good way to break the ice as well is to just ask them, okay, so what's your favorite thing about this particular place, or have you frequented here a lot? And also try and ask open-ended questions as well. And if he responds to, if he gives like yes and no responses to closed questions, that's a bit of a red flag, but we'll come on to that in a bit. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, I feel like we got off topic a little bit because we were talking about like flirting on online versus offline. So I think to kind of reiterate your point before, probably if he's escalating things sexually and being a little bit too aggressive with flirting and you don't feel comfortable, that's indicative that he's a low value man. And I've noticed that maybe it's just easier to pick up on when you meet a guy in person, and men are more likely to act normal in the presence of like others, like if you're at a bar or something versus if you're on a date.
I actually find it really hard to flirt online, like really difficult, because like you rightfully said, you miss so many cues, especially if you're texting. You don't have body language, you don't have the tone of voice. So it's super easy for things to get misconstrued or like for jokes to fall completely flat and stuff like that. So I don't really tend to flirt that much online. I mean, yeah, I prefer to keep it in person.
Yeah, the purpose of internet communication to me is to schedule a phone call, schedule FaceTime, schedule a date.
Yeah, it's to set up the in-person, yeah.
To set up the in-person, yeah. I don't like, I said this before, I don't like texting back and forth. I don't like, prolonged text conversations. I just like to get the ball rolling. And that's why I say that nonverbal communication is just as important, if not more important, because, I don't know, it's hard to build attraction through text message.
Well, and the other thing, too, is we have this in our handbook where we talk about, quote-unquote, triggering a guy's mate-guarding instinct.
Oh, yeah.
So I almost feel like when you're in a public setting, you're more likely to do something like that versus in a private setting where it feels like he can almost corner you.
Yeah.
And he's not necessarily being cognizant of his environment. And then the pressure becomes on you to entertain him a lot more. And I think while we're still advocates of doing something like dinner, I think the part of the handbook where it talks about trying to go to some kind of public event where there's going to be other guys there, even if you're on a date, is also a good way to gauge a man's behavior.
Yeah.
So sporting events, I don't know, even something like bowling, pool hall, any type of like recreational game.
Or the theater. If you're in the West End, you can go to the theater.
Yeah, theater. Yeah, somewhere where there's other people so that you can really gauge his overall public presence and manners.
Yeah, that's very true. I think men definitely do tend to act differently when they're around other people. That's not to say that if they have good social skills, that means they're a good person, because a lot of like narcissists can be very charming and have very good like superficial charm. And there are some guys who are good people who are maybe a little more, I don't want to say awkward, but maybe, you know, not as, you know, they don't try to dominate the conversation. They might hang out kind of in the background a little bit more. It doesn't make him a bad person if that's the case. But at the same time, like, yeah, no, I like to observe how a guy acts in social situations. That's why I love group dates, honestly. I've met so many people from, you know, group dates or from group outings.
Yeah, that's why it's so important to cultivate your girl squad. And that's another topic for another podcast. But having a group of girlfriends.
Building a girl gang.
Yeah, if you have a girl gang that can help you do group dates and bring in different guys to vet as a group and also see how they interact. It's so important. It teaches you so much about that guy. Online dating just really disadvantages women in that way. So I think that's part of the reason why there's so many complaints about online dating, is that you just don't get the full picture of a man in that kind of environment. Okay, so you see a guy that you like. How do you break the ice? What's your best strategy for breaking the ice when you identify a guy that you like, that you want to talk to, that you're looking at, you're giving him eye contact? What's the next step?
I mean, if we're in a group situation, I'll usually wait for an opportunity to crack a joke or make some witty remark. And if he laughs at it, that's a good sign. If he doesn't, not a good sign.
Straightforward.
Oh, man. There have been times where I'll make a joke and it just totally bombs and it just doesn't land well. It happens. It's okay. I don't know. Like, you just find something to talk about. I'm such a bad teacher at this. Fuck.
Yeah, it's funny because, again, like, if this is just something that you do naturally, it's hard to describe to people how to do it. But like you said, cracking a joke could be some, it doesn't even have to be a joke, but any type of observation.
Or witty remark or something.
Witty remark or observation about something in the room or observation about him. Doesn't have to be negative, doesn't have to be like negging, but making some kind of discussion or comment that gives you a focal point for your conversation.
Don't do what I did and ask a bald man, did he have hair once? I fully thought that was an acceptable question to ask.
That's so mean.
You asked him if he had hair once.
Don't do that. Honestly, I swear to God, I wasn't even trying to leg at all. I was just like, did you have hair once? And he was like, haha, yeah, I did. I don't think he was too impressed. But don't ask that. Did you once have hair? Because...
That's such a like backhanded compliment.
I was just,
well, that is like nagging. It's like, wow, it's really brave of you to go outside looking like that. I mean, I just really admire your courage, right?
Because I was just genuinely curious at the time. I didn't, because I thought that, I don't know, maybe he was born with no hair, maybe. But I
just out here, Mr. Cleaning it in front of everybody. Wow.
So don't be like me.
As an aside, though, in terms of negging, I don't know if I want to say this on the pod, but men love negging. Like, not negging. Like, there's a difference between negging, which is a deliberate, like when pickup artists do negging, it's a deliberate strategy to kind of like chip away at the woman's self-esteem or make her feel small or destabilize her and so on. I find like if you can get some friendly banter going back and forth with a guy where you're not trying to like put him down or make him feel bad, but almost creating this kind of like energy, like, oh, I'm not, you know, easy to impress, or I'm not, it's almost like creating a bit of distance that he will then push back on and want to close that distance, but in like a playful way. It's kind of hard to describe.
Well, let's just say he comes over and he's got a drink in his hand and you could just say, oh, hey, what are you drinking? It's, you know, that's a simple observational tactic.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's simple.
And from there, if you wanted to be Lilith, then whatever he says, you can act like it's not good.
Just like raise your eyebrows. I'll just raise my eyebrows, be like low-key judgmental.
Wow, you're just out here drinking Jack and Coke, huh? My grandfather drank that.
No, that's too mean. Here's the thing, though. It's like, I like to be a little bit of nice and a little bit of like, you know, like salted caramel. It's sweet, but it's salty, right?
I was like a Powerpuff Girl, so it's like sugar, spice, everything nice sort of thing.
You know, in cuisine, it's nice to have, when something's just like pure sugar, it's like too sweet, right? You want to have, it's nice to have contrasting flavors. Like, you know, I'll put, if I'm making cookies or something, I make these like salted caramel chocolate chip cookies that are bomb, by the way. But like, I'll put extra salt in them because salt and sweet taste good together. You know, sweet and sour sauce, sweet and sour taste good together. So I like to be like 80% nice, but like a tiny bit mean. And I don't know, men just eat that shit up. I can't explain it, but yeah.
I think it's almost like you want to give off the impression like you wouldn't entertain yourself whether or not they were there, right? I think when you're trying to be too nice, you're relying on that person to fill in the gaps of the conversation, entertain you. I'm going to have a good fucking time whether he's there or not, right? So if he comes over to talk to me and, you know, I'm asking him about like what drink he has or he asks something about me, then I'm going to say something that's going to be entertaining to myself, right? So sometimes the negging thing is just a matter of like you making an entertaining observation or joke because you just want to have a good time, right? It's a way to kind of break the tension and build a sense of rapport with that person. I think you just have to be careful that you don't neg them and then, you know, it ended up being like a...
Yeah, there have been times where I accidentally went too far and ended up... Like, I've had my fair share of dating fails, right? Or my flirtation fails, right? Like, I don't always get things right. So there's sometimes, like Savannah, you know, with the ball going, sometimes you'll say something being, like, oh shit, I went way too far, right? But that's part of the practice, right? Is like, if you go out there and practice flirting, you're not going to get it right every time. If you have an awkward moment, just like take it in stride and move on. It's a learning experience. It's going to happen. Failure is part of life, and that's okay. You just keep trying.
Should I tell the Nigerian story or no? I don't want it to sound racist, but that was a big dating fail. I was like, ooh, are you going to scam me?
No, tell the story, Rope. Set it up properly and then...
Ooh, are you going to scam me? I think I said something like that. No, I'm not going to tell. No, because I don't want Nigeria guys to like be mad.
You don't want to offend the entire country of Nigeria.
Yeah, I don't want to do that because they're strong on Twitter.
But even they'll tell you that people are thieves there. So, like, the thievery starts at the top. I'm not joking. Like, the thievery is everywhere in that country. Seriously, like...
Are you Nigerian?
Yeah, my family's Nigerian. That's why I laughed so much when she said it, because I know the stereotype is that
I'm a Nigerian prince.
No, I now remember what I said. Okay, so one of my big dating fails is I was flirting with this Nigerian guy, and I said, I know a lot of Nigerian people and they work really hard. And then he said, ha ha, yeah. And then I said something along the lines of, well, a lot of it's scams, but.
God.
Was he offended?
Yes. So I don't recommend that.
Yeah.
That was like a neg. It wasn't even a negging fail because I wasn't trying to neg him. I just legit.
It was just an awkward comment. Yeah.
It was just an awkward comment that I think he got offended by. And the messed up part is I could literally see like the point where his like brain kind of switched off. Like, wow, fuck this lady.
Fuck this bitch. Yeah.
Oh, no.
It wasn't even me. Like, he was mean, but he just looked disappointed.
But the point being that, like, you know, in the quest to learning how to flirt better, or how to be more witty, or how to learn better social skills or whatever, you're going to have some failures. And you just got to take your L and go. Take your L and move on, right? Like, you think about, like, stand-up comedians, right? Stand-up comedians, some of the most famous stand-up comedians nowadays, they probably had, you know, years at the, you know, lower-level comedy club stuff where they would, you know, there's a lot of bad stand-up in at like the entry level of comedy, right? Like a lot of the most famous stand-up comedians, they've spent years practicing and they've had bad shows where they've bombed and so on, right? And that hasn't stopped them. They just keep trying and learn from that and move on, right? And that's what makes them so good nowadays.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they weren't always perfect, right? So it's a similar thing when you're learning how to flirt or when you learn how to make better jokes or have better social skills in general. You're going to have some failures. You just take the experience and move on and not like, don't lay it in bed at night being like, you know, thinking about all the awkward, shitty things you've ever done, being overwhelmed with shame. Like, just, you know, don't let yourself become crippled by past failures. Just like take it and move on.
And also at its core as well, like flirting is supposed to be a fun activity because it's meant to be like loose and playful and fun. It's not meant to be, you know, like a university assignment. I think that when you look at the fun side of it, you become a lot more natural and it just becomes a lot more free flowing and it's actually quite enjoyable as well, just to see the different ways that men react to, you know, whatever strategy you're using at that point. It becomes really fun.
I think the overall strategy is to always look and act as if you're going to have a good time wherever you are, no matter what. And whatever that good time looks like to you is going to be different, right? For me, I'm a loud, gregarious type person. So that's how I have fun. And then that's how I flirt. But if you're a little bit more of a reserved person, your version of a good time might look different. And so you're going to want to still build that energy, but the energy will be a little bit different.
Yeah. And that's the other thing about scripts, right? The problem with scripts is that they don't really take into account the individual personality of each person, right? And you want to flirt in a way that's true to yourself, because that way you're going to attract people who are attracted to you, like the way that you actually are, right? A lot of men, I find, when they try to build attraction with women, they'll put on this like whole fake personality thing. And, you know, you end up losing attraction over time because the person that they were in the first 3 months wasn't the real them, right? It's hard to do a script because then that means you're forcing yourself into doing something that isn't true to how you are. And then you end up attracting people that aren't compatible with you. I like Rose's point about just go off and have fun in whatever way that suits you, because that's the thing that a lot of men find really attractive is when you're just going off and having a good time and they will look at you and be like, I want in on that. Like, I want to have fun too, kind of thing. There's an element of almost like FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. And so, yeah, just kind of act like you would have a good time whether they're there or not.
Exactly. So here's a couple of more controversial strategies, I should say. Not mean, not pickup artistry, but a few tactics that you can use to break the ice with a guy, or at least like give signals that you want a guy who you are interested in to come talk to you that are a little bit more indirect, right? So one of those strategies is to strike up a conversation with a third party. Kind of goes back to the same theme, which is like have a good time whether or not a guy talks to you. So
triggers mate guarding instincts.
Triggers mate guarding instinct by talking to another guy or talking to the wait staff or someone, or sort of just showing that you are having a time, you are open to an experience.
You know, that you're confident, that you're witty, that you can hold a conversation as well. This isn't to make him jealous, but it's also a good way to, it can be a good way to break the ice if you strike up a conversation with somebody that you don't have any vested, like romantic or sexual or whatever interest in. You know, striking up a conversation with a third party, and you can bring him into the conversation as well. That's not to say that you have to turn your back and ignore him. That would be rude, but it's just another way to sort of relax a bit. And to, I guess, practice your social skills some more, because you can never have enough practice when it comes to these things. But yeah, but I've employed this tactic quite well. I mean, because I like to talk to people anyway, especially people like the wait staff, because they often have really good stories to tell. And just people around me as well. So they get to see, you know, the way you interact with other people, which can really work in your favor in their eyes.
Yeah, it's not about making them jealous or triangulating or anything like that. It's just about, I don't know. We have all those handbooks posts about mate guarding instincts, and this is one of those things that a lot of people don't want to acknowledge in terms of cognitive differences between men and women. But men definitely have that like mate guarding instinct where if there's someone they like, or I don't know, like they seem more into women when other men are into that woman. It's very bizarre. I don't understand it.
Yeah, men are very easily influenced by their peers. It's actually sad, to be honest, and a little bit pathetic. This is why you always hear men talk about this like alpha versus beta concept, is because in a lot of ways you kind of see them organize themselves that way. It's like if they see a guy they consider quote unquote high value likes, then they like that too, and they want to get that type of girl to like impress that guy. It's all very strange, to be honest.
And it's weird because the red pill says that that's what women do. They say like, oh, women are into guys where all the girls want them. And I've always thought that struck me as odd, because I'm actually not into a guy if I know that he's like a man-ho, right? Like if a guy is really promiscuous, I'll be like, ugh, like he's dirty, you know?
I think they just misinterpret that guy's already hot, and so women are interested in him because he's hot.
And a lot of women like him.
Or because women tend to like to know if a guy is safe. So I can see that dynamic going on. One, if the guy's just already hot, then a lot of women just like him because clearly he's fucking attractive. Or if he's a really nice guy, then he picks up a lot of female friends. And so he can create like actual genuine rapport with women. So then women like being around him, and then they'll recommend him to other friends, right? So yeah, I mean, good. It's just like having a good reputation.
Yeah, a lot of men seem to, like, even if they don't have any interest in a woman before, if they notice a lot of guys are into her, that will make them more interested in her. It's, I don't understand it, but it is what it is. I don't understand it. I don't like it, but it is what it is. So I exploit it.
I do think as guys get older, they get more comfortable with whatever their particular taste is. But definitely, for whatever reason, men are really, really, really high on the idea of social clout at certain parts in their lives.
Men are very competitive.
Very competitive. So yeah, you can definitely exploit that to your favor if you want to do like the whole mate guarding thing.
What are some other controversial ones? What are some other unethical dating strategies?
I wouldn't even call these unethical. They're just more indirect. So another one was giving him a task.
Oh yeah. There's nothing unethical about that. Guys are very task oriented.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you give them a task and they do the task and you're like, oh my gosh, thank you so much, you're such a good boy. They'll be like, oh my God, I'm such a good boy. Like they love that. Complain about something being broken at your house, they'll come over and fix it, and it makes them feel like a big, strong, manly man. They love that.
Yeah.
But even in like the moment, if you're flirting with a guy that you just met, you can just give him something simple like, hey, can you hand me that napkin over there? Hey, my drink is dripping. Can you get me a napkin? Or I'm hot. Is there somewhere else we can go? And then let him find like a more cool place in the venue. Stuff like that. Give him a task or something to execute to impress you, or at least like show that he's going to respond to your respond to your demands.
Yeah, or something where he can impart his knowledge as well, because men love doing that. I remember a few years ago I was flirting with a police officer and I was like, oh, there's no parking in this place, and he told me that he actually taught me British law on the spot. Do you want to know what the law is?
What
it is? That it is legal to park on the pavement anywhere in the UK except for London.
Really? Yeah.
And that is actually true as well, because I parked on the pavement in London and got a ticket. So, yeah, but you can park on the pavement, like, as long as you're not on the whole pavement, but it's not actually illegal to park on the pavement. So it's really funny when I see people from my hometown taking pictures of cars parked on the pavement, trying to basically dry snitch to people. And it's like, they're not doing anything illegal. It's annoying, but it's not illegal what they're doing. So yeah, you can get them to teach you stuff as well.
Yeah, I think that's here's the thing, though. A lot of men, it is very true that a lot of men love to teach women things. I think that's where mansplaining comes from, is because men just like to be seen as an authority on something. So a lot of times it can be really annoying. However, there are times if there's something that he knows that you don't and you want to learn that thing, that can be a really good way to, it's like a two for one. You get to one, learn a new thing, and two, you know, he'll feel like special or whatever, right? But definitely don't play dumb.
Yeah, don't play dumb. Yeah, don't pretend that you don't know something just to get him to explain it to you. Don't do that. But because I didn't know that law, I genuinely didn't know before. So, but yeah, don't play dumb, because that's just dumb.
Yeah, and it's also not genuine. You're better off. Like, for example, I'm not very technologically literate, right? I don't know a lot about computers. So I always have a few guys in my rotation who know computers, so that if I'm having computer problems, they can help me. And just like the passion and excitement they get when they get to explain something about computers, you know, something that they're passionate about, it's freaking adorable. It's so cute when guys are talking excitedly about something that they know and that they care about. So yeah, like that's a good way to build attraction. But I want to make one last point about like touching, because one of the things I don't like about pickup artists is they teach men to build attraction by like putting your hand on her thigh or something like that, which is just very creepy and kind of violating, and I don't like that. But I find like when you do that to women, a lot of times they'll feel uncomfortable, I find. But when a woman does that to a man because he knows he's not under like it's not like an existential threat thing, the same way when a man is pushing down a woman's boundaries. But yeah, if you're talking to a guy and you're like bantering and laughing and having a good time, just like putting your hand on his arm or something like that, it just like it makes their brain melt. They love that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of when I would start to initiate touch contact. So because it takes me a while.
Personally, I've never initiated touch contact. They've always done it first. I'm just shy.
Yeah, I mean, sexual contact is totally different. I'm talking about like platonic, you know, hugging, putting your hand on your arm, that kind of stuff. When pickup artists say, oh, put your hand on her thigh, that's always...
Yeah, that's weird. Don't do that.
Creepy and kind of sexual, like, and violating, right? Whereas if... Or when a guy tries to puts his hand on your lower back, that's another thing that's weird to me.
Yeah, I don't like forced contact. Forced contact is very uncomfortable. So that's like, if guys that do that kind of trigger me a little bit. I don't really like that with a man. I think if you're going to touch him, it could be something... I would just, like, stick with the... touch his arm, touch maybe like the back of his arm or like his forearm. If you want to be like, oh, come over here, and then just like grab his arm. A lot of times, especially in a like a loud venue or a club, in order to hear each other, you'll have to lean in anyways to talk to each other's ear. And then you can initiate contact that way, physical contact.
Yeah, like there have been times I'm talking to a guy and if it's loud, especially you lean in, you put your hand on his arm. You can just see in his face, his brain just like malfunctioning for a second there. Like, it's adorable. I love it.
Hacking men's brains one episode at a time.
talking with.
Female dating strategy.
Yeah.
So that's our best flirting strategies. Leave some of your own flirting strategies in the comments under this podcast. I think we'll make a thread on the website for our members. If you want to post your own flirting tips underneath that thread, we'll certainly read them. Please check out our Twitter at fem.strat, as well as our website, thefemaledatingstrategy.com, as well as our Patreon, patreon.com/thefemaledatingstrategy, where you can get weekly bonus content. Thanks for listening, queens. And for all you scroats out there, your opinion still doesn't motherfucking matter. Die bad.